Welcome to the Racing Post Bloodstock Top Lots podcast, brought to you in association with Irish Thoroughbred Marketing. From the Cheltenham Festival to the Melbourne Cup, Irish Thoroughbreds will take you to the top. Irish Thoroughbred Marketing is your all-access pass to the world-leading Irish racing industry. Visit itm.ie to source your Irish champion. I'm Martin Stevens, here with the Racing Post sales correspondent James Thomas, and we're joined this time by Henry Beebe, Chief Executive of GOFS and Chairman of GOFS UK. Hello, Henry. Hello, James. I don't think any of us made it to Deauville this weekend for various reasons. Did you miss it or suffer any sense of FOMO?
Well, I've been at Deauville for the last few years, obviously not last year, but I didn't go this year, but we were represented there well. I probably watched more horses go through the ring than I might have had been on the ground. We had Tom Taff on behalf of GOFS was there interacting with clients. Amanda Zetta, our new French agent, was obviously on site as well. And so I certainly probably spoke to Tom more than I spoke to my wife over the weekend to find out what was going on, who was buying, and more importantly, were they coming to our sales in Doncaster and GOFS next week and next month.
And James, I hear the takings at the Drakkar were down in your absence.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, look, it was a shame not to be there, but we're in strange times, aren't we? And obviously, I've got the delights of Doncaster to look forward to in a few days, so I'm sure we'll more than make up for it there.
Exactly. So, Henry, it's coming up to a hugely important time of year for you. Can you just outline for us what's coming up for GOFS and GOFS UK and when?
OK, well, it starts next week with the Premier Sale in Doncaster, which is our most important UK sale of the year. The Premier Yearling Sale has been a market-leading sale in its sphere for a number of years, and we're hugely excited about that. In the UK, that's followed by our September Horses in Training Sale in the beginning of September, where we'll have a full day of very strong horses in training, headed as ever by a very strong Jigginstown dispersal that they have every year. And immediately a day later, we then sell 50 horses in Wales at the GOFS UK Yorton Sale, the third renewal of that, and that's made a really good start. Across here in GOFS, where I'm at the moment, we are preparing for the Orby and Sportsman's Yearling Sales. Very excited about those. We're working hard on the Autumn Yearling Sale, Horses in Training Sale. We're out on the farms canvassing for November foals, November breeding stock, fillies off the track, and we'll very soon be looking at National Hunt foals for the December National Hunt Sale. So it's always a busy time, but this is a particularly busy time for us, but we're very excited about it and really looking forward to it.
So for the casual bloodstock follower listening, can you just give a rough guide to the character of those sales coming up in the short term? Because I know Doncaster has a particular character of its own, and then GOFS Orby has its own niche in the market.
Yeah, well, the Premier Yearling Sale used to be called the St. Ledger Yearling Sale. It's got a great reputation down the years for selling sharp, early commercial types. In the last few years, that has evolved into horses that have a little bit more longevity. It's got a great record for selling very good race horses, horses that have gone on. It's been a maker of stallions, the likes of Dark Angel, Acclamation, Wooden Baffin are past graduates of the sale. It's known for selling very good two-year-old winners that regularly win at Group 1 level, Group 2 level, Royal Ascot, and go on to the very top. We have a good catalogue this year, headed by the likes of the own brother to Illuminate. We have some very nice Dark Angels in the catalogue, which you expect, particularly from where he stands at Yeomanstown. And this is a sale that consistently punches above its weight. Dream of Dreams is a recent graduate, 44,000, the Diamond Jubilee winner. Zane Claudette, who won the Princess Margaret, looks a good horse running at York this week. I noted that Richard Hannon described Happy Romance as definitely a Group 1 winner in waiting. So that's what that sale is all about. The Orby sale is the Irish National Yearling Sale. It's the most important sale in Ireland every year. It's one of Europe's premier sales. It normally sells at least one classic winner a year. Mother Earth is the flagship horse this year. Grace is the cover, the winner of the 1,000 guineas and the Prix Rothschild. And we're delighted to have her sister by Sioux Nation back in the sale. We've also got a sister to Vertic Flair, a brother to Alpha Centauri. We've Galileos, we've Frankels, we've Dubawis, we've Love de Vegas, we've Kingmans, we've Invincible Spirits. It's a top-class sale. It's a world-class sale. And it's supported this year we're bringing to the market the Goss Million. So only horses in the Albury Sale this year can run in what will be Europe's richest two-year-old race next year, run at the Curragh the weekend before the sale. It'll be worth a guaranteed minimum of €1 million, prize money down to 10th place. We've also added a group or grade one bonus. So if the winner of the million next year goes on as a three-year-old to win a group or grade one race in Ireland, Britain, France, Australia, or the United States, we'll give them a €100,000 bonus on top of that. The sportsman sale follows immediately after. We've got a €100,000 challenge race connected to that over six furlongs, the millions over seven. So that backs up with a real good bunch of commercial yearlings over 2 days, the Albury sale. But the Albury sale and the Premier sale are our two flagship sales of the year. They're very, very important to us and they're very important to the industry.
And you mentioned there the new or the relaunched million races. Can you just explain why you felt now was the right time to reintroduce that initiative?
Well, I think being frank about it is because last year's Albury sale was not a success. In fact, it was an enormous disappointment. It didn't hit the heights it's hit in recent years. It was on an upward trajectory in the years leading up to last year with regular, every year there was a seven-figure top price, a six-figure average, and it was doing really well. Last year, it fell very flat. It wasn't a good sale, and we sat down and thought about what we needed to do to rejuvenate the sale. The sale was relocated last year to the UK, and one of the USPs of what is the Irish National Yearling Sale, the Albury and Sportsman Sales, is Kildare Paddocks and bringing people to Ireland for many of the best yearlings in Ireland to be offered every year. So we did a lot of chatting, a lot of reviewing, a lot of chatting to leading vendors, leading buyers, and some significant players in the market said you need to look at something to make the Albury stand out again. And so we talked at length, we looked at various different options and eventually decided that the best thing to do was have something that really caught the imagination. So Europe's richest two-year-old race is only open to Albury graduates. And as one leading breeder said to me, it's not that people will think, well, I might go or I'd like to go. They'll have to come, was his view. And that's going to be our hope. It certainly caught the imagination of our vendors and purchasers. The vendors have supported us, as I outlined, with a very, very good catalogue. The sire profile is superb. There are some very good pedigrees in there, and we're delighted to have them. And the buyers so far, the likes of Tom Taff when he was in Doble with Amanda, Mark Richards in the United Kingdom, Jacob West in the United States, Matthias Sieber in Germany, Phillips Vicky in Scandinavia, Mark Player in Australia, and our Japanese agents have all said it's really caught the imagination. So we're hopeful that that's what happens and people come to Kildare Paddocks for the 2 days of Albury, stay for the 2 days of Sportsman's. And I know one thing. I've seen a lot of the horses. I know they're going to like what they see. There's a lot of very good potential horses there. And I think a number of vendors have slightly tweaked what they've sent to us and sent us horses that they think are going to make quality two-year-olds and then train on to be classic three-year-olds. And that's the hope.
Very good. We touched on last year's sale there. Obviously, we can't talk about 2020 without bringing up COVID. Just wanted to get some of your thoughts on how COVID has impacted Goffs and Goffs UK and possibly your life personally as well.
Well, I think the first thing to say is, you know, we're no different. We're better off than most people. So I think everything is relative. And we caveat anything we're going to say by saying people have had, all over the world, a horrendous time with COVID. We all know people who have had COVID. Some of us know people who have died from COVID. So it's been a very traumatic time for everybody globally. So in context, in our own world, it's been very challenging. And particularly challenging for sales held in Ireland. Each government around the world has taken their own route to try and navigate their way through the COVID pandemic. And I'm not going to say that I think one government's got it right or one government's got it wrong. But the Irish government took a very much more conservative approach. And so it made it very difficult, or more difficult, I should say, to hold sales in Ireland for a period of time, probably for all the right reasons, than it did in England. So we were forced to relocate sales from Ireland to England, the most high profile of which was Albury. And it didn't work. We were forced, both in Goss and Goss UK, to delay some sales, in some instances cancel sales. And so it's been an enormous challenge. We took a very we took very swift, proactive action in our business to try and protect ourselves as much as possible. We instigated a lot of cost cuts, including remuneration cuts for all the team. And then we essentially put our head down and just did the best we could do. We had a lot of decisions to make. I'm proud to say I think we got a lot of them right. Undoubtedly, we didn't get all of them right. The Orby was perhaps one of them. But we've come out the other side with the help of our vendors, and our vendors have been very supportive of the decisions we had to make. And yeah, it's been a trying time. It hasn't been an enjoyable time for anybody. But as I say, we're better off than a lot of people. From my own point of view, having dismissed George Stannis in Golf UK a few years ago, said, "It's madness, Henry, all these early morning flights to come and have a 2-hour meeting with us. You should use something called Zoom." And about 3 years ago, I said, "Well, a lot of rubbish. Would you be quiet and get on with your work sort of thing?" I now think Zoom's the best idea I ever had, and I do all the meetings with Zoom. From a personal perspective, my carbon footprint is better. And I think to give you, put that into perspective, in 2019, I think I took 85 flights, the majority of which were just backwards and forwards between Britain and Ireland. In 2020, I took 4. I'd like to get it somewhere between 4 and 84. I don't want to go back to 84. Zoom will make sure that doesn't happen. I've used the ferry a lot, had my own car in England, and that's been interesting. One of my lines, having been married for 32 years, is that the success of my marriage is the fact that I'm never at home. We've tested that in the last year, and she still seems happy enough. So maybe that wasn't right. But yeah, I mean, there have been some positives. You know, the advent of GOS Online. We, like all sales companies, we were flirting with online sales, but it was one of those things we did when we had time. We accelerated that. And I give full credit to the GOS UK marketing director, Michael Orton. Without him, we wouldn't be where we are. But we now have what I think and what people tell me is one of the most customer-friendly auction house online platforms. We've done over 10 million euro worth of business. We've taken over 8,000 bids. We've sold to 22 countries. And you have to say that the overwhelming majority of that business wouldn't have been possible. And that's been GOS Online supporting normal live sales where people couldn't come because of travel restrictions. We've had live online sales where Nick and myself and others have stood on the rostrum and spoken to a screen. And we've had timed online sales where there's been no horses and no auctioneer. I don't like the last of those because I'm an auctioneer and I sort of, it's like when somebody says, "Should we have a silent auction?" I find it vaguely insulting. But we've cut our cloth and we've adapted as best we can. And let's hope we are coming out of the real restrictions caused by COVID with the vaccination program. And the most important thing from GOS point of view is that we were looking at having to move our Orby sale to England again. Tattersalls were being very helpful to us because there was a suggestion at one point that we were going to hold the Orby sale in Newmarket. Happily, that's not looking like it's going to be the case. And we will be holding the Orby sale and Sportsman sale in Kildare paddocks where they belong at the right time. But that makes me touch on one other point, is that the collaborative nature of the bloodstock industry has been one of the pluses that we've been able to see, and the fact that rallying around and helping each other that have come out of COVID. You know, people don't know that regularly Tattersalls and GOS in particular coordinate on things of a non-competitive nature, such as, say, drug testing and codes of practice and conditions of sale. But, you know, I talk to Edmund Marnie far more than anybody would think. He and I effectively do the same job for two competing organizations. We and our colleagues on both sides of the IRC are massively competitive. We'll do anything, you know, within reason to get a horse, get a client to our sale before they go to the other sale and vice versa. But I think that's very healthy. I think that's what provides such a vibrant marketplace in Britain and Ireland. But in the last 18 months, we've worked collaboratively together and also with Arcana. We've hosted 2 sales for Arcana. We hosted some Derby sale horses in Doncaster last year. Tattersalls offered to host our Orby sale in Newmarket. And that was a way of us all working together for want of a better phrase, for the greater good. And that's obviously a plus too. So there are some pluses. I wish it was never been required. But, you know, it's rather perverse in many ways talking about the Orby sale. Edmund was offering me something he didn't really want to offer. And I was asking for something I didn't really want to ask for because I wanted the sale here. He wanted the sale here. And fingers crossed, it looks like that's going to be the case.
Yeah, fingers crossed indeed. I was going to ask you about the sort of positive outcomes of COVID, but you've rather touched on all those, which just leaves me with one important question. I understand there was a beard growing competition between yourself and Nick Nugent. Can you reveal who the winner was?
Well, it was a rather sort of throwaway juvenile comment. When we all started with the lockdown, it was like, this will be a few weeks. And I don't know how it came up, but Nick and I were talking on, I think it was on Zoom, and something about somebody hadn't shaved and would we grow a beard. And it turned out to be a competition. I think it was an honourable draw, really. His was certainly darker than mine. Mine turned out to be rather grayer than I might have hoped. I think what we would say is we both grew what we would call respectable beards. I will never grow a beard again. I've never before. My dear mother very kindly said she thought it looked appalling. Others were more complimentary. I think Nick and I can say that we did grow successful beards. We know of others who will join in who weren't quite as successful and then said, no, we don't really like beards. We're shaving them off. But what they really meant was they weren't doing very well. So it's something I think it's as Stephen Fry said, you should try everything once except for incest and Morris dancing. I don't know whether that's right. But I've grown my beard. I won't be doing it again.
So what is your reading of the yearling market? You said there you were following the action at Arcana over the last weekend and you've been speaking to buyers and all your agents around the world. What's your reading of what the market is going to be at the yearling sales this year? And not your hopes, but a real realistic expectation.
Well, we've obviously analysed closely Arcana and closely the Phasic Tipton Saratoga sale, which was hugely successful. As a former intern in Phasic Tipton, I was delighted they came back with a real bang, and Boyd Browning and all his team deserve all the credit for that. And I was delighted for Eric and Freddie with that their sale proved part one of their August sale in particular proved successful. I think we're going to see what we've been seeing over the last year. I think we're going to see, and it's a massively overused word these days in bloodstock terms, but the market seems to be quite polarized, but it's appeared very resilient. I think the good ones are going to be highly sought after, and the further down you get, the more challenging it may be. And I think that's probably what we saw in Arcana, was a relatively selective market, but very, very strong at the top. And I think that's probably what we'll see. We're hopeful. I see that, some publications were comparing with 2019 for Arcana, some weren't. Whether that's right or wrong, it's hard to compare with last year when things weren't quite the same. I think if we can, get back towards where we were in 2019 with the majority of sales at all locations, 2017, 18 and 19, the Premier sale and the Orby sale, the ones I'm most focused on, we're all growing and doing very well. Mm-hmm. So I think if we get back to those kind of levels or approaching those kind of levels, we're going to be happy. I think clearance rates will be important and, providing the deepest buying bench we can do at all sales. And certainly we're doing everything we can. We've got agents all over the world, to bring people in to buy. I'm thinking about the Orby sale, particularly the Orby sale. We've appointed a new agent in France, as I mentioned, Amanda Zetterholm, a new agent in the United States, Jacob West, who's very well connected, very proactive, and we hope to be able to attract a good number of American buyers to the Orby sale. And we've also appointed this year a Goffs British agent. So whereas the Goffs UK team who sell in Doncaster are focused on bringing people to Doncaster, and I'm obviously very focused on that too, we wanted a Goffs agent in the south of England, which is Mark Richards, who used to work for the Hong Kong Jockey Club, mm-hmm. who's very well connected and knows everybody. He lives in Newmarket now, and his sole focus is to bring British buyers to Kildare paddocks, starting with the Orby sale and then obviously onto the Sportsman sale, the Autumn Yearling sale, the November sale, and so on and so forth, and the Land Rover sales in the National Hunt world. So I think, a bit of pragmatism looking forward to the yearling sales this year. I think we're hopeful, as opposed to wildly confident. And I think Saratoga and Deauville have given us, have allowed us to be hopeful. And, as I say, well done to the teams at Phasic and Arcana. And let's hope we can continue it at Doncaster next week, that the Tats boys have a good time too, and that we can continue it in Goffs in Kildare paddocks.
And I should have said there, you're talking about your agents. And I meant to ask, actually, as part of the COVID line of questioning, are things back to normal now? Because I saw Joey Cullen was over in Denmark last week. So now that travel is opening up again, are you managing to do more of that promotional activity?
I wouldn't say they're back to what they were pre-COVID, but they're getting there. And, you know, now that we've, you know, if you're double jabbed and you can move about and you can demonstrate that you don't have to quarantine and you can go to most places, we're not back to normal. I think Australasian buyers are going to be still cut off to us for a while. As I said, the Australian government have taken their own view, which has made it more difficult to come in and out of Australia. Again, that's an observation, not a commentary. We are traveling to more places. Tom Taft, Joey Cullen, Hayley O'Connor, Elaine Lawler, Mark Richards, Jake, Amanda, Philip, Matthias, Mark. They're all moving about, going to places a bit more. Joey Cullen's gone to York. We'll all be in Doncaster next week. So we're getting there. We're not there yet, but we are, you know, I think like everybody, now that we're vaccinated, I think we're all looking to the future now and saying, look, COVID's going to be around for a bit longer than anybody, you know, really, of course, anybody wanted and anybody hoped and we thought originally. But it's now something that with vaccinations, we're going to have to try and live with. We're obviously going to take precautions. And, you know, again, another overused and dreadful phrase, the new normal is, you know, perhaps wearing masks indoors. It might not be compulsory, but it's certainly advisory, and maybe not being in packed scenarios as much as possible. And, you know, hand hygiene and cough etiquette and all that kind of thing. So we're in a new world, and but we are trying to get back to some normal. And I certainly hope that I don't have any more sales where I'm talking to a screen, where I'm talking to more people than a screen. Mm-hmm. I still have, I think, things like outdoor bidding areas, you know, relaying bids from out back in Goss and out front in Goss UK, are things that are going to be with us for a while. The fact that we will allow people to pre-register and bid online, I think that will always be there from now on. And that's a benefit in many ways. And, you know, so we'll just work away.
Now, I think the Goss UK Premier yearling sale next week is going to be one of the first auctions, or certainly the first where it's printed in the catalogue, the new Bloodstock Codes of Practice. Mm-hmm. Can you just tell us, I know you would have been instrumental in how these were formulated. Can you just tell us how they were formulated and what the response has been from both your buyers and your vendors?
Well, I'd say there's no negative feedback to the introduction of the new Bloodstock Industry Code of Practice. Goss were proactive members of what's called the Bloodstock Industry Forum, that is representative of the industry in Britain and Ireland. I think one of the key points is, and we were very, very keen to ensure, this is a British and Irish code. And the new code holds no fear for anybody, in my opinion, because what the new code does is it simply reflects in very modern and explicit language the law of the land in Britain and Ireland as it applies to the buying and selling of bloodstock in those two countries. It outlines very clearly what the relevant laws are. It says what is acceptable and what isn't acceptable practice in the buying and selling. The key difference to previous codes is it provides free legal advice to an appointed lawyer, expert lawyer in Britain, one in Britain and one in Ireland. So if somebody thinks they've got an issue under the code of practice, but they're hesitant to come forward with it, they want to check, they can go and get confidential free advice from a lawyer to find out whether they have a criminal, whether there's a criminal complaint, a civil complaint, or any breach of the code of practice. And then the BHA have written into the rules of racing, and IHRB are very supportive of the code. And you can ask, why wouldn't they be, given that it's a reflection of the law? And I think the code is going to be embraced by certainly the auction houses, the Federation of Bloodstock Agents, all vendors, all buyers, like the TBA, the ITBA, the Racehorse Owners Association, the Agents Federation. We're all represented, the Breeze Up Consigners, we're all represented on BIF to ensure that it was a completely collaborative approach. And I think it's a modern document that's fit for purpose and holds no fear for anybody who goes about their business in a lawful and ethical way. And I think what I'd like to point out is it's very easy to focus on the negative. Just remember this, when Justin Felice produced his report, his review into the buying and selling of bloodstock for the BHA, he said that he thought there were 5% bad apples. Now, that's what some people focused on. What we could have, and I think we should have focused on, is that was essentially a 95% approval rating for the bloodstock industry. That the overwhelming majority of people in the bloodstock industry go about their business in a very straightforward, honest, transparent way. Certainly from an auction house point of view, Goffs has been around since 1866. Goffs UK, in his previous incarnation, has been around since 1962. Next year, I'll celebrate 40 years working full-time for an auction house. You don't last that long in a business unless you conduct yourself in a very, very straightforward way and act with absolute integrity and transparency at all times. And I think, you know, we're in a very small insular world, the bloodstock world. You know, it's all about repeat business. If people are going to conduct themselves in an overwhelmingly positive way and in a straightforward way, people won't go back to them. And I think track records speak for themselves. And as an auction house and as an auctioneer personally, I trade on our integrity. It takes, my father always told me, it takes years to build up and one silly action to lose it. So I'm not going to let that happen for myself. If I've got anything to do with it in Goffs, it's not going to happen at any of the 8 locations at which we sell. But I think that goes for the overwhelming majority of people who both buy and sell bloodstock in Britain and Ireland, and indeed all over the world, because it's a very international business. So I think the code of practice is a positive move, the new code of practice. If we were to be criticised as an industry for anything, it was that we'd left the previous codes to sit without review. We are committed as the Bloodstock Industry Forum to review these codes on at least an annual basis, and we will meet at least once a year to review. And it's a bit like the conditions of sale. You learn and they evolve with advances in law, the evolution of veterinary science, case studies. You know, something pops up and you think, haven't dealt with that before. And do we need to change the conditions of sale? Do we need to react to that? So I think, you know, the positives to come out of it are that it's very explicit, that it provides confidential advice, and that it's fit for purpose, and that it will be regularly reviewed and revisited.
Yeah, and I think the introduction of the new codes of practice are obviously laudable. I had one query about them in that, and perhaps this has always been the case, I can't quite see how allegations of a rare breach of practice would be provable, because wouldn't they always end up in he said, she said situations with the benefit of doubt given to the accused, because rightly everyone is innocent until proven guilty. It just seems unlikely there would be a paper trail for any wrongdoing or that it would somehow be recorded. So what would you say to someone who, on the very rare occasion, to stress again, would want to report an alleged case of a breach of practice? What would they need to produce in order for some sort of justice or punishment to be meted out?
Well, I think we have to acknowledge, and the points you make, Martin, are all very valid. We have to acknowledge that we'd all love to live in the ideal world, but we live in the real world. So, of course, people have to be able to demonstrate that they've been wronged. And you may end up in you said that, no, I didn't, yes, you did. And the burden of proof. And people are innocent until proven guilty. But I think in all walks of life, we make decisions on people's honesty and integrity. You know, I don't know anything about cars other than you put the key in or press the button and you drive them. So I'm not a mechanic. But when my car breaks down and I take it to the mechanic and he says, this car's knackered and you need a new engine, I decide whether I believe him and pay the sum that he chooses to charge me, or whether I think I'm being ripped off. So I think what I'd say to somebody who is thinking of getting into the business or is worried, that if they have an issue or a worry or concern, there are lots of alternatives out there. There are lots of choices. You don't have to go to the same place. You don't have to use the same professional advisor. And you build up relationships with people and you develop trust over a period of time. And we all have freedom of choice. So when I'm picking my car mechanic, it's no different from picking my lawyer or my accountant or my professional advisor in any walk of life. So if I'm picking somebody to advise me on the buying and selling of horses, then I build up a relationship with that person, and that's what I do. So yeah, you can make the argument it's going to be difficult to prove. You know, I don't know what those people over there are talking about, and I can draw conclusions. But I think people just have to make their own decisions. We've tried to make it as explicit as possible. We put in, as I say, this new layer of protection so that people can take confidential advice. And then it's up to people what they do. I mean, it's a bit like, the analogy as well is a little bit like this. If we're walking down the street and on the other side of the road, we see somebody getting a good kicking from somebody else, we've got essentially 3 choices. We can put our head down and walk on and say, it's nothing to do with me. We can call the police, or we can charge in to help. Now, I'm probably too much of a coward to charge in and help, and too wet and too weak. But I certainly wouldn't walk on by with my head down, I would call the police. So we've all got decisions to make in life, and we've all got we can all make our own judgments. And I think that's how this applies to doing business in the bloodstock world, as it does to doing business in any other walk of life.
Yeah. Okay. So so we don't end the podcast on the very worthy but slightly dry topic of sales corruption and the new codes of practice. I've prepared a very quick fire Q&A for you. So stand by. Who is the most expensive horse you've ever sold?
I was the privileged auctioneer with Chiquita, who made €6 million in the Paul and Dispersal in Goss in 2013. I've also sold a couple of Galileo fillies in the Orby sale for my friends Gillian and Vimar Kosler, consigned by Balalinch Stud, who made £3.2 and £3 million. And in Doncaster, I'm very lucky to sell the highest price ever in Doncaster when Interconnected made £620,000.
And the best horse you've ever sold?
Well, how long have you got? I mean, as Goss and Goss UK, we've sold endless Classic winners, Cheltenham Gold Cup winners, Group 1 winners, Royal Ascot winners, Grand National winners. I don't know which is the best I've ever sold, but, you know, the list could go on and on. It'd only be a long advertorial.
Okay, the proudest moment of your career?
Of my career?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of highs. I'm a very privileged person. I have a job that I adore. I was given a great opportunity at a young age. I'd say probably two or three things stand out in my mind. I think building the new sales complex in Doncaster, when everybody told me it was impossible, I took over as managing director of Goss UK, as DBS as it was in those days, in 1998. And 10 years later, we opened the new sales complex. Everybody told me it was impossible. I spent 8 years negotiating with Doncaster Council and working on funding and things like that. We built the new sales complexes, put the funding in place before our association with Goss. It was a very proud moment in April 2008 for me and all the DBS team, my father as well, when we opened that complex. I think also joining together, being involved right at the centre of the merger of Goss and DBS to form Goss and Goss UK, and working very closely with Emma Mulhern to deliver that. Emma told me that one of the jobs she was given, specific role she was given by the shareholders of Goss when she joined Goss as chairman in, I think it was 2005, was to break into the UK market. And she just liked the cut of our jib in DBS, for want of a better phrase. And I think when we put the two companies together, because others had tried to do similar things in the past and failed, I think that was a very proud moment in I think it was the 6th of July, 2007. And so I took on the role then for myself as the group chief executive overseeing both Goss and DBS as it was then. And I think also landing the Paul Inn and the Wildenstein Dispersal that could have gone to any auction house anywhere in the world, but they chose Goss and they bought them here, Paul Makin and David Wildenstein. When they came here and bought those sales here, they were very proud moments. And the fact that the focus of the world was on Goss, as I say, you know, delivering and then delivering for those, both those people and other people. But I think there's a pride in performance when you're an auctioneer. It's all about, we're asking people to trust us with very valuable commodities. And it doesn't matter whether it's one horse from a one mare owner, in the countryside of Ireland or England, or a great big draft of horses. It's about delivering on what people have asked us to do and exceeding expectations. And so, you know, I can talk about Chiquita and Frankel foals that I've auctioned for $1.8 million and Goss are sold and See the Stars and Galileos and all that sort of thing. But I think the real pride comes out of when somebody says they're hoping to get a figure and you deliver a bit more. And then the other side of the coin is standing on a race course and seeing a horse that we've auctioned going on and winning. So when Mother Earth won for the Coolmore Partners, you know, I shouted as loudly as I suggest. Well, I've got a bigger gob than MP Magna has anyway, but I probably shouted as loud, if not louder, than the people who actually own the horse. I mean, they're not our horses. We hold them in our hands for 2.5 minutes. Mm-hmm. But once a horse has been through our sales ring, we call them our horses, and that's the connection. And there's a pride in that. So those are my proud moments. I think the other memory was the London sale. was something that was very different. That was a very proud moment. And then thinking back, sharing the rostrum in Hong Kong for the second and third Hong Kong International sales with my dad, you know, there's a family connection there. DBS wasn't a family business, but we were very involved in it. We owned, you know, a large chunk of the shares in it. So sharing the rostrum with him doing that, and on a personal basis, the fact that for 25 years I worked day in, day out with my dad, and another 10 years I worked, you know, with him, albeit from I was in Goss and he was in the UK. You know, on a personal basis, that was very enjoyable. And, you know, he remains, you know, an inspiration to me, and his example, and a great mentor. So I'm, you know, what's my proudest moment? There's loads of them, and I'm very lucky. Dad's always told me, Henry, this isn't a job, it's a way of life. And it's a way of life we get paid for. And, you know, I have to pay the bills and the mortgage like everybody else. But, you know, I'm very lucky. I've never done anything else. I won't do anything else. And I'm delighted to be allowed to do it.
Now, I'm hoping for as full an answer to the next question. What is your funniest or most embarrassing experience in a sales ring?
Well, there's, you know, you get a lot of laughs. I was auctioning once years ago with Michael White, one of my ex-colleagues in DBS, was standing behind me. And I said, I sell to the lovely lady across the ring. And I heard him say behind me, Lucky, she's lovely, she's ugly. Ken Oliver, one of our great mentors, one of the co-founders of DBS, had some wonderful moments. I was bid spotting for him once. He dropped the hammer sold to the man in the front. And I said, sorry, Mr. Oliver, I can't see who that is. And without turning the microphone on, he announced to the whole audience, it's the fellow in the front row who looks like a baboon. There was the time I was taking bids. People bid in very different ways, and people often bid by winking at you. I took four bids off a guy in my early days, and Donnie, who winked at me. And it was only later on, when I saw him later on, I noticed he had a twitch, and he winked all the time. Nick Nugent got his leg stuck last year when he was sitting on one of those revolving chairs and tried to auction with his leg stuck in the chair. And Nick Nugent has told me, has on purpose to try and make me laugh, has just before I'm about to take the rostrum, the microphone, has whispered a joke into my ear or a line into my ear that has made it very difficult to concentrate. And I was the guest auctioneer in South Africa many years ago at the National Yealing Sales there. And we had a good laugh because there was all the yealings there are named when they're offered. And there was a filly called Lola Babalola. And the other auctioneers, Steve Davis from New Zealand, Andrew Miller and Mike Kalassi from South Africa, challenged me to put the words Lola Babalola into the chant. And so we had a bit of a laugh about that. But embarrassment would be missing a bid. And it's embarrassment. It's absolute catastrophe and the worst thing you can do. And I go back to the professional pride thing again. You know, everybody wants you to get on with it, but nobody wants you to drop the hammer too quickly. So they would be funny and embarrassing, but it's, you know, I live to auction. It's the icing on the cake. So there's lots of good moments, and they're all, most of them are enjoyable.
And then finally, with the Goss UK Premier Yearling Sale coming up in Doncaster and Goss Orby coming up in Kildare Paddocks, can you give us some restaurant or bar tips in Doncaster and then around Nace or nearby?
Well, I know that, you know, I think James sort of inferred earlier on that the D he likes to go to is Derval, and he isn't quite as excited as coming to Doncaster. I accept that Derval's a wonderful place, some beautiful places. There are lots of very nice places to eat in Doncaster, and we were very gratified that one of the bonuses of holding our Orby sale and Sportsman sale in Doncaster last year was a number of people who'd never been to Doncaster said they were really impressed with what Doncaster had to offer. I stay in the Mount Pleasant Hotel. There's a new Hilton Hotel. There's the Austin Hall Hotel. There's the Crown of Portree. There are some very nice hotels in Doncaster that also do good food. On Sunday night, I'm going to a very good steakhouse. I think it's called Miller and Carter, just close to the Mount Pleasant Hotel. There's a good Italian in Bawtry. There's the China Rose Chinese restaurant in Bawtry. There's some good restaurants in Doncaster. And on site during the day, we have a really good team of caterers called Dine in Doncaster, who have a really good variety of food there. And I think, you know, people would struggle to complain about the fare there. Here in Ireland, in County Kildare, the list is long, but, you know, people love staying in the K Club. It's a wonderful place where the Ryder Cup was held. It's a beautiful, beautiful hotel. It's 10 minutes away from Goss. A lot of people stay there internationally. but there's also the Killashea Hotel, the Lawless Hotel, Osprey, Barberstown Castle, all lovely places to stay. And there's umpteen good places to eat. Vida Chateau is one that stands out in Nace. My local town, just another 10 minutes on, is Kilcullen. There's a wonderful pub there that does great steaks and good chicken wings called Bardens. There's a nice restaurant called Fallon's. There's umpteen places, you know, around here. Ras Salah House, owned by the O'Flynn family. Joe used to work for the Curragh Bloodstock. It's a beautiful hotel locally as well. You know, you're not going to... People love coming to the Orby Sale. And often, you know, the interesting thing is about coming to the Orby and Sportsman Sale, a lot of people come to Ireland and only really stay in Ireland, trainers in particular. They might come to Leopardstown or the Curragh, but they might do it on a day trip and they might only stay one night. When they come for the Orby and Sportsman's, they might be here for four or five nights. They might go and visit, you know, Kildangan, the National Stud, Coolmore, and see the wonderful stallions there and the great places that they have to offer. And they stay in the night in beautiful places, and they really enjoy it. And the welcome from Irish Thoroughbred Marketing and all the Goss team, as you know, fellas, is unique. And I think people enjoy it when they come here. And hopefully they find some beautiful thoroughbreds as well.
Absolutely. James, do you have any more questions?
No, that's everything for me. I've just been making a note of all these places to go and have dinner when I'm next over there for the Orby.
I know you like abracababra in Nace, don't you, James? That's...
That's my top tip.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time, Henry, and best of luck with the sales coming up. We'll be back for another Top Lot podcast sponsored by ITM in the coming weeks.